All right, everybody, this is Chase March, and we have special guests on the phone line right now. We have the filmmakers of School Life. We have, I'll see if I can say this right, Niasa Nihianon?
Nihianon, yep.
Nihianon, close. Uh-huh. And we might be joined by David in a moment.
Yeah, he's just finishing off in the kitchen.
Okay. So you made a documentary, A Year in the Life of Two Educators That Run Primary Age Boarding School in Ireland. So can you tell us about why this project and what drew you to that story?
Yeah. We were living in a very remote part of Ireland in the Northwest. And I wanted to live in an Irish-speaking area and because I was brought up speaking Irish. And this was before children. And then we had two children. And then we realized that it was just coming out of the crash in Ireland. A lot of the educational resources were stopped, and our children were in a very small school, which we thought was kind of an idyllic kind of setting. But we realized that we wanted them to have a more diverse education. So we started looking for another school, the village school that they went to. You know, the Catholic Church had quite a big influence on it, and there wasn't any other choice for people who weren't necessarily, you know, of the Catholic persuasion. So we started looking at all kinds of schools, Educate Together schools, which would be, I don't know if you know what an Educate Together school, but basically it's a group of parents who have come together to set up a non-denominational school, because their children come from different backgrounds and maybe from different countries. And we also looked at the Steiner schools in the area. And then in the end, we found this school, Headford, on the website. And what attracted us to it was the headmaster's letter. In the letter, he focused on the happiness of the child. That was sort of the primary focus. And we felt that this was a really good starting point for education.
That's interesting, because we're in Canada here, and we have kind of two school boards. We have the Catholic board and we've got the public board. Uh-huh. So it sounds like it's a little bit different over there.
In the more rural areas, it's very difficult to find non-denominational schools. You know, I have absolutely nothing against religion, but I think all religions should be taught and respected. And if you're in Ireland and if you're in a very rural area, it's predominantly Catholic, and sometimes you have the choice of a Protestant school, and that's it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting to see the differences in education in the world, because we kind of just get stuck in our own little neighborhoods and don't see how it's working in other places.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So are your children in this documentary then?
Yeah, not as main characters, because in the end we moved down there as a family and our children attended the school as day pupils. We, both David and I, went to boarding school when we were children. I went when I was a little older, I was 11, and I had chosen to go to boarding school myself because I had been as a day pupil to a primary boarding school, and it was quite similar to Headford in that it had, you know, it had amazing grounds, it had a woodland, we had immense freedom as children. You know, we did all the fort stuff. And so, you know, I had quite an idyllic kind of view of what a boarding school would be. So when it came to going to secondary school, I wanted to go to a boarding school. David had quite a different experience. His parents were living in Nigeria at the time, and the Biafran War had broken out. So as sort of a means of protecting him, really, and also looking for a good education, they sent him as a 7-year-old to a boarding school in the UK. And that was very traumatic for him. So we both had different views of what boarding schools were like. So when we discovered Headford, the headmaster knew of our previous work, and he asked us if we were interested in making a film about the school. And we were both fascinated to know what the 21st century boarding school looked like. So we took a year to research the film. We moved down as a family. Our kids attended the school. That year, we just kind of sort of researched the idea to see if we wanted to make a film about this school. And the experience was transformative for our children. And we did. We discovered that we really did want to make a film about the school. So that's how the whole project sort of came together.
Yeah. And if you're watching this school and this class of students for a year, how do you end up getting an hour and a half long version of a movie? Because you probably shot a lot of footage in that length of time, I would think.
Yeah. When the first year we didn't shoot anything. We were parents. We were just parents. We didn't have access to any of the classrooms. All we could do was research the history of the school. And we talked to a lot of alumni. Like, we talked to 50-year-olds, 40-year-olds, 30-year-olds about their experience of the school. And we tried to figure out, like, how, like, you know, what was the school and what did it bring? And at the same time, we were seeing our children and how they were reacting to this type of education. So we were seeing them as parents, and then we were researching it. But we weren't actually in the school really until we started filming. And that was the second year. So we spent 2 years in the school. We had an office. We asked for an office in the school because we wanted to film observationally. We didn't want to interview anybody. We wanted, like, that's what we aspire to when we make films. We try and make observational films. You know, we wanted to the freedom to be able to sort of dip in and out of classes and out of, you know, what was happening in the day. And we also really wanted to really get to know our characters. So luckily the school agreed and they gave us an office in the school. We did shoot for 2 years, but in the end we ended up using the footage from the second year. And that was more for coherence sake, because the children change from year to year. And in order to have like a coherent narrative, we decided just to focus on the second year.
That seems pretty interesting, because at one point in the film, there's one of the teachers is teaching music to this rock band kind of style of group.
Yeah.
And he says, you probably don't think you're as good as last year's group.
Yeah.
So yeah. That explains the 2 years, because you kind of don't see why he was saying that or how they would have been aware of last year's group.
Well, they would have been aware of it because they would have watched last year's group. One or two of them might have been in the junior band. Like, usually there's a senior band. For storytelling reasons, we just focused on the senior band.
Okay.
The band from the year before, they were particularly good. I mean, they were a great band.
It was interesting to see the teacher's style, because he seemed a little bit cold.
Mm-hmm.
And there's another student that was coming back to help him, and she was basically saying, you can't talk to students like that. Did you find that's part of his character, or?
Yeah, absolutely. He doesn't, I mean, you know, John, he has a massive heart, but he doesn't mollycoddle kids. You know, he takes it really serious. The band room is all like extracurricular activities. And if a child, you know, joins a band and commits to being in there, he expects them to put in the work to show up, you know, when they're supposed to show up, because he treats them like musicians. That's his thing. They're musicians. And this is how musicians should behave.
Yeah. There were some tears, though. There one drummer,
yeah.
a kid that came late into the school year, and she was...
Yeah, Florida, yeah.
She really wanted to play the drums, and she wasn't good enough, I guess. And
it's not that she wasn't good enough. She was extremely good. I mean, I think you see her straight... Like, there's a sequence in the woods where the kids are all playing in the fourths. I mean, you know that she's an incredibly good drummer. Mm-hmm. But she's a soloist. And she has lost her self-confidence. Like, she worked as a model in London. And she has, you know, she wasn't able to kind of, you know, fit in and do the simple drumming to the band. You know, she wasn't able to join the group. But when she was playing on her own, she was amazing. And in the audition, you see that she's actually really talented. And then when you see her in the wood scene, you know, that's her drumming, and she's amazing, but she wasn't confident enough to get up there on stage with all these other kids. So she ends up painting instead, and, you know, and there's no pressure on her. The following year, she took up the guitar and she became a guitarist in the band.
Oh, wow.
Mm.
Yeah. Another narrative in the film. We're talking about school life. We're talking with Niasa. Hope I said that right. One of the filmmakers. And another narrative in the story is that it's a husband and wife that are running the school, and they're looking at retiring. They don't actually retire. It doesn't seem like in the course of the film, But it looks like they're about to, and that's going to shake up their whole life because they're like, well, what do we do? Because they're like 40-year educators, and it seems like that's just what they are and what they want to do.
Yeah, they don't run the school. There is a headmaster, so they're underneath the headmaster. The headmaster was a student in the school at seven and was taught by them, by both John and Amanda. And yes, you're right. I mean, they were teaching there 46 years when we were filming, and they're still teaching there.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And I mean, for John, his whole life, I mean, for both of them, their whole life has been about teaching children. And I don't think John can retire. I mean, I don't think he would have, you know, he wouldn't have anything to get up for in the morning if he didn't have the kids to get up for. I mean, even on all his time out, you know, when you see him in the band room, he's not on duty. That's what he does in his spare time.
Okay.
He's a Latin teacher, a maths teacher, and an English teacher. He teaches the upper end of the school, but the band is just something he does in his spare time.
Okay. Is that the only music program they have at that school, or is there music as
well?
So
you get a little glimpse of the choir. There's two scenes where you see the choir. You see, there's a little scene of Barbara, the little drummer. She's, you know, you see her practicing her violin one night in the dormitory. And you see Aurora, another little girl, playing the harp. I mean, there are music classes, but they weren't our main characters. So we sort of put them in sort of transitional sequences where you could see that the kids, yes, they did play more sort of classical music. But for us, we were interested in what happened in the band room and in the different layers in the band room. And obviously we were following the Florrie story, and we were following the Eliza story, and of course the story about the children, the band that couldn't sing.
So. Yeah. It's interesting though, because I think it's important for kids to do music and to put themselves out there. So, mm-hmm. You know, just to be able to do it and try it and not be scared and step up. So,
no, exactly. And that's what John tries to create. It's probably not as explicit in the film, but you see, like, you know, if you're not a musician, you can be a carpenter. So you can build a stage, rearrange the stage, put up shelves, put up, you know, different sort of structures in the band room. Or if you're not talented with woodwork, then you can become a muralist. So you can paint on the walls. And then if you're none of those things, you can be a cleaner. And so none of those kind of positions are permanent. It's very fluid. And it's John's way of kind of encouraging people into a creative space. And then they can move from cleaner to musician or muralist or, you know, carpenter, whatever. And he tries to keep it very, very fluid, but he tries to create a very sort of free space where the children feel it's their space, that they market, that they sort of set up the rules, but they have the potential to move from one area to another if they want.
That's nice. All right. Yeah. I think we've covered the story. Talk about what you're doing with this film and where people can see it.
Our North American premiere was at Sundance, and there we were picked up by Magnolia. So that was very exciting. So they are going to put it on cinema release in America in 15 cities to start with from the 8th of September. So we're really excited about that.
Nice.
It's a film that plays like a narrative. There are no interviews. There is no voiceover. It's, you know, it's one scene sort of, you know, merges into another. You follow two inspirational teachers. You see how they help three different students overcome different types of issues. Like one child has dyslexia. One child, she's extremely shy. She finds it very difficult to speak in public. And then one child who's lost her self-confidence. We try to kind of show a diverse kind of set of problems and see how these two teachers help them overcome these problems over the course of an academic year. But it's a funny film. I think it's kind of a celebration of childhood as well, because I feel that these two teachers really understand what it is to be a child, and they kind of haven't really left childhood themselves. I think they create a very sort of special space, and it's a film that celebrates freedom. And, you know, when you give freedom to children, magical things can happen.
Oh, I definitely agree. And I see all of those things. And your style of not having the interviews, not having anyone speak to the camera and just tell the story is kind of refreshing. Because sometimes when you just see those kind of styles, it's just, maybe yours, you can get into the story a little bit more easily.
The problem with observational filmmaking is always having a coherent narrative. And that takes time. And, you know, we invested a lot of time in getting to know our characters. I mean, when we first started on this project, our two protagonists, John and Amanda Layden, the two teachers, they had no interest in us as filmmakers. I mean, it took us a year to crack that door open.
Oh, wow.
And for them to trust us and to understand that we were there for the long haul, that we really wanted to try and capture the essence of what this school gave to children. Because we knew from speaking to all these, you know, like we spoke to 50-year-olds, 40-year-olds, 30-year-olds, 20-year-olds, all like through all who had been to this school through John and Amanda's era. And we got the same stories back from them. And so we knew that we had to try and capture whatever that was that they all held dear in their hearts. And so that took some time, and it took some time because they're very private people. They don't seek any kind of glory. You know, they don't really do adults. They're just interested in kids. You know, as parents for our first year while we were there, I don't think we had a single conversation with them. They just weren't interested in us at all. They were interested just in our children. So it took some time to be able to find the characters, and then it takes time to be able, you have to invest time to be able to kind of stay the length until the narratives play out. It's not the easiest genre of filmmaking, but I think if you invest the time, you know, there is a great payoff in the end.
Yeah, and you kind of see the payoff because I go through some of the same stuff as a teacher that they do. You could see the end of the year kind of blues that you get, and then you could see the celebration at the end of the year, and even John, is that his name?
Yeah, John.
Yeah, like he does a silly voice with one of the kids at the end, and it kind of breaks out of that, oh, this old curmudgeon-y kind of character that I've been seeing. Like, I could see some of the fun that he was having with the kids. You could see it in the music too, because you could see that he was dedicated into getting them to, you know, step up and perform. So, yeah. I think overall, like, it's a good film, and you managed to capture what you were trying to do there.
We knew that we had to get those two. We had to, that they were the two people we wanted in our film, because with all the alumni that we spoke to, they were the names that kept coming up. They were the people who had left their mark.
Nice. Well, thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it. And thank you for getting me a screener, because I wasn't able to attend the film fest see it in person just because of my crazy schedule right now.
Oh, you're so welcome. You're so welcome. Should I say that, like, it's going to be at Hot Docs? It's going to be, it has three screenings at Hot Docs, and Blue Ice are our distributors in Canada. So I'm hoping that they will find that they're going to distribute it in cinemas around Canada, but we haven't been given a date yet. They've just picked up the film recently from Magnolia, and hopefully it's going to be in cinemas in Canada after Hot Docs sometime soon.
Nice. And just to close off, do you have any social media? Is there any way if people want to find out more, they can?
We're on Facebook. So our Facebook page, which is School Life, if you put in School Life, it'll show up. And we give updates on, you know, the festivals it's doing, the awards it's winning, and our cinema release dates. So if anyone's interested in the film, go to our School Life Facebook page.
Excellent. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. This is Chase March. Follow me at chasemarch.com for Teaching Tip Tuesdays and lots of other great educational content. Thanks for listening.